YourHealthNow.com.
Welcome one and all to this version of America Tonight. Oh, it was a night for Republicans in California, believe it or not. Yeah, they were at Reagan's place, the Reagan Library, and everybody was there, including Newt Gingrich, of course, Rick Santorum, Ron Paul, Rick Perry. Who's that other guy that's running? I'm kidding. Mitt Romney, Michelle Bachmann, Herm Cain, John Huntsman, like I said, Ron Paul, all the way down the line. So did they lock horns? Was anything settled? Did people get a sense of who might step out of the shadows and ultimately get the nomination? You know, I think these debates are good so that you can flush out a little bit more about some of the candidates. If nothing else, it can be interesting to handicap them. NBC did a poll afterwards, and Ron Paul, I knew I could get out of that. Ron Paul actually won that the aftermath. So, you know, who won, who did the best, he was far ahead of the rest of the group. He hasn't been far ahead of the rest of the group when it comes to, like, the Washington Post, ABC, CNN, any of those kind of polls that political people are looking at. So far, Rick Perry seems to take all of those, at least in the last 3 weeks he has. Social Security was a thorny one. Rick Perry said it's a Ponzi scheme. Mitt Romney says you got to keep doing whatever you can to protect Social Security. And then there were a couple of other moments, lighter moments of chuckling and whatnot. Most of it centered around the economy, though. A lot of the questions were about the economy and jobs and that kind of stuff, as you would imagine, especially since the president is addressing the nation on Thursday with his own message of pumping up jobs and getting the economy really kicking back into gear again. Dick Cheney, who was the vice president, as you know, for two terms under George Bush, has a book out that I heard is pretty interesting. I haven't read it yet, but Cheney takes the gloves off. He said some heads were going to spin in Washington, and he talked about, you know, all the people that he worked with and talked about various things that happened during the administration. And Cheney's often asked to comment on politicians on the Republican side, especially, of course, Democrats as well. He was asked about Rick Perry, the governor of Texas. A lot of people are speculating about Rick Perry's relationship with George Bush and speculating about other things with Perry, some of the things that he's said recently. And here's what Cheney's take on Perry.
I would deem it inappropriate.
What, to say he's treasonous?
To make that kind of suggestion, I just think is over the top. And I think I'd be surprised if we hear Governor Perry make that charge again.
All right, yeah, that goes back to that whole thing where he talked about Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve, what was going on, and he said it was treasonous what was happening with the, you know, to the American people, with the economy, as far as what was going on with the Federal Reserve and printing money. Of course, I think it's been going on for a long time. It's like monopoly money. That's the thing, you know, that quantitative easing, just printing the money, which has devalued the dollar. But he did use the word treasonous, and you heard Cheney slap him down for that and saying it's inappropriate. There's been a lot made lately about the words that are being flung around, whether it's Jimmy Hoffa Jr. saying that the Tea Party are a bunch of SOBs, or whether it's the Vice President Joe Biden taking his own swing at the Tea Party, and vice versa for some of the Republicans, some of the things that have been said too. I don't think, I think it's just heated politics. People in mainstream America, on mainstream, or on Main Street, are frustrated beyond belief. I don't think they're picking apart the words that politicians are saying that might be appropriate or inappropriate. I think really, honestly, it's about solving the riddle that is and what's becoming of the country and what direction we're headed in it. That's it. I mean, where are we going from here? And the deficit, if anything, is what haunts too many people. Will we ever be back in the black while I'm alive? You know, honestly, I don't have a lot of faith in that. We're bleeding red all over the place, and it just keeps going in that same direction. I don't think that I put a lot of stock in that. And that's a problem. I mean, you can't keep doing that. You can't keep spending, and then the bills come due, and then you're just borrowing more money. It's ridiculous. When you do that, when we do that, they shut you down. I mean, you start getting those notices. You're being foreclosed. Your credit card rates, the APR goes through the ceiling. You couldn't possibly pay it. And, you know, we know the nightmares that are out there for the everyday American, if that were the case. So the rules just seem to be different for Washington. I don't think they seem to be. They are different. We have smart people in this country, and I think smart people need to step up, and they need to be part of the process. I think that's part of what's missing here, probably because they don't want to tangle with the nonsense, the political machinery. That's why I always advocate for a third party. Let's get some of the biggest, the brightest, the baddest, who aren't afraid to say, by the way, when they're wrong, and aren't afraid to arm themselves with the correct people, or who they think are really the correct people, to handle some of the bigger problems. Because that's the thing. The buck always stops with the president, but it's who the president surrounds himself with. Who is around that president? That is the key. So who are the economic advisors? There's been some terrible economic advisors. I have no use for Ben Bernanke. I would totally agree with Rick Perry on that. And I'd say the same thing with Tim Geithner. Tim Geithner, who is he beholden to? Who is Ben Bernanke beholden to ultimately in the past? Where really do their interests lie? And that's, I'm just getting started. When it comes to the economy, we could go down a huge list. Advisors in the past, Larry Summers, some of the others, some of the choices. You know, I just shake my head because I know there are better people that can cut through all of the nonsense and just strictly look at the numbers. And they can do it without being political. Maybe that's the problem, not getting the numbers. It's that fuzzy math. It's like when we talk about the numbers that come out when you're manipulating the budgets, that's it. It's manipulating the budgets to fit the whatever the personal needs are for whatever department, and it's out of control. Out of control. So another GOP debate. This is what happens when you have too much coffee. And there's seven left before we get to the end of the year, but we're no closer to a decision on 2012, at least on the Republican side of things. Please decide to come back. We're going to turn the page. We got more for you. We can count next. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Hey, everybody. Jason Lewis here once again. These are hard times for investors. If you're like me, you just don't know where to put your money because there's a downside to every possible scenario. Now, look, every portfolio needs a hedge for inflation. Gold has been the classic. I want to tell you, I want to be honest with you, commodities fluctuate. So you could lose money. Gold goes up and down. But every stable portfolio usually has an inflation hedge, and gold is, well, the gold standard. Washington is not going to get us out of this recovery, so you've got to protect yourself. Give it some thought, and if you're interested in converting your IRA to gold or would like to actually have it in your possession, call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237. The U.S. dollar was once backed by gold, but it's lost a lot of its value since then. Call Midas Resources today, 1-800-686-2237 for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, and tell them Jason Lewis sent you.
Ready to save? Then you're ready for the Super Summer Sale at Herbal Healer Academy. Herbal Healer has been the leader in quality natural supplements for 23 years. Log on to HerbalHealer.com and take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on 500 parts per million colloidal silver. The best pharmaceutical grade available at all sizes on sale. Super Male Plex with you Hindi and Super Femplex for summer toning. Buy glucosamine chondroitin 60 caps, summer sale priced at only $12. Colon Enhancer 250 caps, summer sale priced at just $18. And if your brain's a little foggy, we have a great supplement on sale called Memory Power. Log on and hit the postcard specials link for more super summer savings at HerbalHealer.com. As always, new customers get a free catalog with first order. Herbal Healer Academy, healing the world with nature one person at a time.
Boy, I don't know how this skipper did it, but 45-year-old Brian Oliver was on his boat when it got caught in a storm on Monday, 3 miles offshore, St. Augustine, Florida. So, wow, he was thrown into the water. The Coast Guard and a bunch of other boats spent hours searching for him. Here's what the scoop is. He was hired to fix the electronics on a 42-foot boat. He wanted to make sure they worked. So he's doing a test run. He left at sunrise, and he was headed towards St. Augustine, and he was doing fine. Everything was great. It was a nice day, no problems. There was a little bit of wind, but not anything terrible. Then all of a sudden, it changed. He hit a squall. It happened in the afternoon, and he was 30 miles away. What he had done was he had put the boat on autopilot. Can you imagine? Hoisted the sails, the whole thing, shut off the motor, and then that was it. So the squall slammed him, and then that was it. He went overboard along with the cooler. He says the waves were so big. Oh, this would be my nightmare. The waves were so big, he couldn't get back to the boat, which was going further and further out to sea. So he tied the strings. This is quick thinking. He tied the strings of his bathing suit onto the handle of the cooler, and he used that to float. And that's what he did. He floated and floated and floated for 9 hours. Oh, can you imagine? He would occasionally have to dog paddle or do whatever he could. He was just drifting in the water. He said he actually saw the Coast Guard helicopter 3 times, tried to wave, but it was too choppy. They never saw him. And the current was so strong. So just after midnight, he finally made it to shore. Oh, is that the worst? Somebody said to me, do you believe his story, or do you think he just said that to get attention? I'm going to say I believe his story. I'm going to say I believe his story. I can't imagine being in that situation. And, of course, I think it's true because he was on the boat. What was he doing? He was working on the boat, and he fell over. of course. And he's lucky that he survived that. I mean, he is lucky. Because also, what's in the water off of St. Augustine, you look down from those helicopters, boy, sometimes in the right spots you see those sharks. And how scary would that be if he fell over in the afternoon and then he's there till after dark? He had a, boy, he had to be hugging land when he hit land. And they were, man, they were searching for him everywhere. All right, here's something a little bit different since we're talking about water. Detroit police divers discovered a 200-year-old cannon. Yeah, in the Detroit River. They say the dive team was just doing a routine deal, and they found in a training session, and they found it. It's the fifth cannon that they found in 3 decades. So they're going to raise it up from the river, and they're going to, it's going to be restored by the Historical Society. They're trying to figure out its age, where it came from. There were 3 other cannons that were recovered in the 1980s. A fourth was also found in 1994. What do they do in the Detroit? They just threw all the cannons in the Detroit River? I mean, I know there's a joke in there somewhere, but how crazy is that? Where'd you get the cannon? Oh, in the river. Yeah, they threw it in the river. Oh, man. Okay. Moving along to something else, the president will address the nation with his job speech. You all know that by now, right? The numbers have jumped around a little bit. What probably we're going to hear is about $400 billion. That's the amount the president is going to propose to jumpstart jobs. So I'll say it again, $400 billion. Congresswoman Maxine Waters in California, I don't know what was going on with her, but she was suggesting a trillion. There is no way. They have got to strike a trillion from their vernacular. So $300 billion, that would be in tax cuts and federal spending. And the Thursday night speech comes right before the NFL kickoff to start the season. There are several Republican lawmakers who say they're not going to be at the Capitol to listen to the speech, but I think he'll still have his mix of certainly of people in there. A bipartisan congressional committee, by the way, is supposed to hold its first public meeting on Thursday, too. They're trying to cut the deficit of $1.2 trillion or more over a decade. If they don't come up with an agreement on how to do that, there's a trigger that will kick in, an automatic spending cut. Or cuts, really, it's plural, will take effect, and that would happen right before Thanksgiving. Right before Thanksgiving that would happen. So we'll see what comes on Thursday in the speech. A lot has been made about the numbers. Like I just said, $400 billion is the number that I heard. Wow, never get a playmate mad. I'm talking about the Playboy variety. A former Playboy Playmate of the Year, who appeared in the movie Rosemary's Baby, so she's an older playmate, was sentenced to 9 years in state prison. She shot her husband in the back at their Hollywood home. Ooh, domestic violence in all forms. And 9 years for wounding. So didn't kill him, wounded him. Los Angeles County prosecutors wanted to throw the book at 66-year-old Victoria Ratgeb. So she was sentenced, and she pled no contest to attempted voluntary manslaughter. It happened during an argument. So he was in court apparently for the sentencing. He didn't talk to anybody afterwards. She was the 1968, if you're curious, the 1968 Playmate of the Year. But her name for the playmate situation, she had a fake name, Angela Dorian. And she had a bunch of television and movie roles, and I guess the biggest one was Rosemary's Baby that people might remember her from. Wow. She couldn't help it. The argument got out of control, and she lost control, I guess. How about this? A New York lawyer got 3 years for insider trading. You don't hear much, not training, by the way, trading. You don't hear much about insider trading anymore. I think people are, my theory is people are more cautious about the information that they leak out there. I'm not saying it doesn't go on. Of course it does. But just here's one that was in the news. And, you know, so as far as releasing the information, he ended up getting the punch right there in the stomach. And because they caught him red-handed with the information, kind of reminds me of the Martha Stewart situation, except for that Martha Stewart, it was a mere pittance that she was talking about when her advisor, if you remember, from I think it was Merrill Lynch, actually told her to sell. And I still remember that stock. I want to say it was ImClone, remember? And she did, and then she got caught right in the middle of it. This guy, it was for a little bit less than that, a couple of $100,000 anyway, and he decided to plead guilty. How about this? A man sued his ex for a $53,000 engagement ring. He accused his ex-fiance of fraud and deceit, and he wants the ring returned. $53,000 engagement ring. Are you kidding me? The ring would blind you. That ring could be a weapon. Apparently he is running a successful business. The guy who's doing the suing is James McLean, and he's suing Nicole Grazioli. He wants it back. He also wants a 2006 vehicle, a Hummer, back as well. So whatever happened there, he is upset. They agreed to marry, all that other sort of stuff, and then it looks like they split, and now he wants it back. Is that gentlemanly to want that ring back? What did she do? I want to know what she did, and they don't tell you any more details other than that. But I thought you weren't supposed to ask for the ring back, even if it is a crazy amount of money. Because that is a crazy amount of money for a diamond ring, isn't it? 53. What could you do with $53,000? By the way, the SUV, that's another $25,000. So he may end up winning this. Apparently, she lied to him, he's saying, and he's got some other things that he's going to pull out in court and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's going to be tough for him to get that ring back. We'll see. Don't worry, we'll be following it. Stay with us. We're kicking the can down the road here on ATN.
What nutrition are you missing that's leading to the four major diseases? Cancer, arthritis, heart disease, and Parkinson's. There are at least 80,000 medical studies that show a lack of the protein glutathione to be linked to cancer, heart disease, Parkinson's, macular degeneration, lung disease, digestive diseases, diabetes, Alzheimer's, ALS, rheumatoid arthritis, and lupus. In all, at least 68 diseases. What is the number one food by which your body is most empowered to increase its glutathione production? It is undamaged whey protein from grass-fed cows. One World Whey is truly the first undamaged whey protein powder on the market. All other whey proteins are damaged by heat, chemicals, and filtration. One World Whey is now the standard by which all other whey protein powders can be measured. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's one world, W-H-E-Y.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
What would you do with a check for $25,000? What if you could eliminate all of your credit card debt in 90 days and keep all of your money? Hi, I'm Jason Davenport, and I've just completed ZeroDebt100.com, a program that stops and prevents debt collections of all kinds, including debt collectors and foreclosures, with guaranteed results. Forget loan modification. Zero Debt showed me how to get the banks to pay my property taxes and insurance while stopping my foreclosure without paying one dime. An attorney tried to garnish my wages, but the court denied his request because of what I file from the Zero Debt program. Find out how I did this by calling Zero Debt today at 800-477-9256. Tell them Jason sent you and ask for the Zero Debt special and the free bonus promotion about stopping an IRS levy and getting your money back. Tell them Jason sent you and call 800-477-9256. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit www.zerodebt100.com.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry, go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Welcome back to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, coast to coast and all those nooks and crannies in between. Well, you know how I feel about the Second Amendment. I mean, I think from day one, I made my position very, very clear, and so have many of you who listen to this show. We have talked a lot about ATF's Fast and Furious, and the body count keeps on coming, sadly. You know, we're talking like 200 or some such thing. I think it's even higher than that at this point. But yet, people get promoted, and nobody goes down for this. Nobody is answering for this. I don't understand how, excuse the pun, it just gets buried. So, who better to have on the show? We're thrilled to have him, Larry Pratt, the Executive Director of Gun Owners of America. He's held that position for a whopping three decades, as you also know, we've talked about before, a big-time membership. Over 300,000 and counting Americans are part of the GOA and, of course, dedicated to promoting Second Amendment freedoms. Larry, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. To continue your deadly sense of humor, we have come to the conclusion that among the few industries to genuinely get stimulated by the stimulus money was the Mexican undertaker business, because they've obviously had an uptick in people they have to bury because of what we've done to their country through Fast and Furious.
Yeah, that's it. And how come at this point, and I know there have been some people on the Hill who have really tried to push the ball forward on this and get some answers, but my feeling is, as long as you have the Attorney General, Eric Holder, in the position he's in, you know, look, no, including his position, nobody's going to answer for this, even though we're all outraged. Do you think that, sadly, is the case?
There's plenty of truth to that, but let me give you a couple of interesting things. One is the U.S. attorney in Phoenix was fired last week. He's the only person to have been sanctioned truly for his involvement in this. And the suspicion is that he wasn't fired because he got caught covering up with a deputy of his that the day after Border Patrol agent Brian Terry was murdered and they realized, oh, those two guns, those were ours from Fast and Furious. And so in email, the two of them discussed, maybe we shouldn't just disclose this at all. And so supposedly that's what he got fired for. But my guess is that he had been one to rat out people above him. He wasn't going to be the guy to fall on the sword. So I think it was a reprisal, frankly, because there's a whole bunch of other people that ought to be sitting with him in the penalty box. this is something that they have not wanted to deal with, but there are a couple of avenues short of getting a new sheriff in town,
sure,
which I devoutly hope we do.
Right.
One is that the House could vote to have an independent counsel. That person could be put in the office of the sergeant-at-arms, who happens to be the chief of a fairly large police force, the Capitol Hill Police Force.
Mm.
And if the independent counsel is able to develop a case, and I don't know what kind of presentment it might be. I'm not sure if it would have to be another vote of the House. But in any case, they could come up with charges for any crime allegedly committed in the Capitol. And an arrest for that could be made by those Capitol Hill police anywhere in the District of Columbia. So one sign that we had a counsel who was getting close would be some of the officials of the Department of Justice begin telecommuting from their suburban homes. Now, the other thing that could be done, anybody that was part of these crimes in Arizona, I would think first and foremost of the Phoenix office chief, William Newell, he could be a prosecutor, the attorney general, county prosecutor, could go to a grand jury and seek an indictment for things like reckless endangerment, conspiracy to commit murder. And if, in fact, he got an indictment, then the people involved could be extradited back to Arizona. And it's interesting that the net could be spread farther, at least on the conspiracy charge, than just people that were operating full-time in Arizona, because various functionaries of the Department of Justice and the then head of the ATF had made trips to Arizona specifically to discuss this program. So the net could be spread fairly wide from that avenue. But what I see right now is ICE has got several balls in the air. He's the head of the oversight committee that's looking into this scandal. Among other things, he's looking at ways to, I think, try to stop the FCC from putting the kibosh on the Internet.
Sure.
And I think that's pretty important, too, because that's our first line of defense anymore.
Yep.
With email. By the way, I'd invite people to go to gunowners.org and sign up for our email alerts, because that's the way, with the embedded email we put in there to send up to the Congress, that we keep the heat on these guys and let them know that these issues are active and we're watching. But ISA is moving methodically, if not rapidly, and he's got a couple more hearings scheduled, and there's going to be one, if not two, next month. And then if that's all he needs, he needs to then consider getting some sort of action considered by his committee. Is he going to go for a contempt of Congress? Well, as you've indicated, there's really not any way to enforce that physically while this regime is in power. So we've urged his office to consider the independent counsel route, and that could still happen because if ISA develops the goods, so to speak, develops the case, then the counsel becomes almost more of an administrator rather than somebody that has to do a lot of spade work on his own. And this thing could at that point conceivably move fairly quickly. But we're whatever is going to be done, we're moving up closer and closer to an election. And frankly, one of the things that should be done now, and the debate hopefully tonight will have at least one of the candidates bring this scandal up. I mean, almost daily now we're getting new information about it. You've probably heard, maybe you've already discussed it. It was discovered just a day or so ago that they had been doing fast and furious kinds of things in Indiana,
yeah,
in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, we have some reason to think that it wouldn't have been every field office, because some of the management of those offices probably had made the decision that they're not going to rise any higher. They're not going to give up their integrity to rise higher and go to Washington or something like that. And so we understand, I can't tell you this is an absolute fact, that Miami had been urged to partner with Tampa when they had a guy putting containers full of rifles to send off to the cartel of Honduras. So we think the Miami office said, that's nuts, just like the agents in the Phoenix office were telling Newell, this is nuts.
Yeah.
So as much as I want to get rid of the ATF, it's not a constitutional agency. Having said that, then all the more it's important to add, but there are people of integrity working in that dreadful organization. God bless them. We wouldn't know about this if there weren't, because they're the ones that blew the whistle. They'd still be running guns down to Mexico.
Yeah, I agree. It was so shocking when this story broke, and I have some friends who have worked in the past for the ATF, frankly, too, who left because of some of the boondoggles that they saw that they had to endure when they were in that line of work, and so they went.
I've talked to such people, and they have trouble when they leave if they want to remain in police work because they're going to have a boo-boo on their record put there by very vindictive people who, as I'm sure you've discussed, got rid of two of the agents that were complaining about this and had blown whistles, and they've done reprisals against others. These guys are nasty to everybody. They're equal opportunity tyrants.
Yeah. What was behind this? Was it a colossal blunder, or you think there was more of a setup?
We have the smoking gun on that.
Yeah.
We have email that were exchanged between Newell and the guy in the White House, Kevin O'Reilly, National Security Council member, actually assigned from the State Department. State Department was in on this, too, actually, at the foundational meeting in October of 2009. And O'Reilly is asking Newell in Phoenix, hey, have any of your Fast and Furious guns turned up at crime scenes? We'd like to use that to justify a demand letter. The demand letter he's talking about is the one after they got caught in a conspiracy for murder, they went and said, hey, we need more gun control over these civilians. And so the four southwest border states are being the gun stores are being compelled to submit multiple sales reports for anybody buying a rifle, two or more, within a five-day period. And that's against federal law. The federal law says you can only require multiple sales reports on handguns.
Yeah, crazy.
And, details.
Wanted
gun control. They wanted to change the dial on the debate. They knew it was toxic the way it was. They had to have a game changer. What better way than, hey, it's only mostly Mexicans. That doesn't, you know, it's a little brown people.
Oh, but that's politically incorrect. You know, that would never be in an email anywhere. But you're right. I agree with you 100% because that's what I was scooping out before all that happened. And as you talked about the tie to the White House and saying, well, this was the spin on the whole thing about a way with this to track the guns and to try to find out where they were going and give me a break. I mean, the whole.
May I point out that someday I think it's much more likely than not that William Newell, head of the Phoenix office, is going to be occupying a bench at our expense for quite some time for perjury. Back in the middle of last year, he and three members, including Kevin O'Reilly, of the National Security Council. They work in the White House. So we're getting close to the president if we're not there yet. Newell was saying, guys, can't you persuade the Mexicans to cooperate with us in tracing these guns? Because, you know, once they leave, we don't have any control. Well, he testified that that never happened and that he never would have allowed that and never knew that to happen.
Larry Pratt, Executive Director of Gun Owners of America, thanks so much for joining us on America Tonight.
OpticsPlanet.com is where discerning gun owners and outdoorsmen go to gear up. OpticsPlanet has the best selection of rifle scopes, red dots, night vision, holsters, bags, and tactical gear on the planet. With always low prices, free shipping on most orders, and expert customer service. Go to OpticsPlanet.com/GCN to get a free gift with purchase. That's OpticsPlanet.com/GCN. Or call 800-332-OPTICS. 800-332-6784.
Hi, this this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Hello, friends. Alex Jones here. You all know I've worked for years with Steve Shank and eFoods Direct. I have eFoods for my own emergency food supply. You know, Steve, life is different now for all of us, isn't it?
Very different. People are using this great food to survive the present hurricane season, and we've already had $40 billion worth of damage from floods, storms, quakes, and droughts. And that's just the first 8 months of this year. Natural disasters are newsworthy, but only touch a few of us Americans. The huge issue of the greatest depression is on everyone's mind. The unemployment, the loss of homes, lost businesses, and skyrocketing food costs are hitting every American, so everyone needs food security.
Folks, this month you will get free shipping on every food order from eFoods Direct. That's right, every order gets free shipping starting September 6th. Get stocked up with the best storable foods out there with eFoods Direct, and be prepared for any emergency before it happens. To take advantage of this special, call 800-409-5633 or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use EscapeHarassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape Harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
Such memories when I think of Led Zeppelin. Some of them I think I can tell on the air to all of you across America listening to America Tonight. I'm pleased to welcome to the show someone who knows all about Led Zeppelin and touring. Stephen Davis joins us. He's got a book out called LZ75, The Lost Chronicles of Led Zeppelin's 1975 American Tour. Stephen, how are you?
I'm fine, fine. Thank you so much for having me on.
Let's set this up. You're a rock writer. It's 1975. You're on assignment. You're writing for the Atlantic Monthly. What were your expectations when you were hooking up with Zeppelin going into this?
Well, Kate, I thought I was about to enter an English rock star hellmouth, you know, of debauchery and decadence and all that stuff that the early Led Zeppelin had accrued to their reputation. And instead, I joined the tour in Chicago on a very cold winter day, and I found the singer Robert Plant with the flu. He was so sick he could hardly sing, and the guitar player Jimmy Page had a broken finger and fairly obvious substance abuse issues, and the drummer was intoxicated all the time and dangerous.
Ooh.
And the bass player seemed clinically depressed and played a lot of boring keyboard solos. And I thought to myself, what happened to the English rock star hellmouth? You know, this is more like a backstage rest home or a clinic. These guys were very ill and cold and homesick and missed their wives and girlfriends and their kids. And they still had to go out and be completely brilliant and be Led Zeppelin three or four nights a week in front of 20,000 kids. So the whole stress and emotional, you know, issues involved in all this stuff were very fascinating to me. And it was something that no one, you know, had seen before. So when I was on this tour, I kept a bunch of notebooks, and I lost them for 30 years. And when I finally found them again in 2005, I started reading these stories. And they were also surreal and lurid, and some of them very boring, you know, like kind of like classic rock itself. And I thought to myself, this would make a really good book, just about this band's 1 year at the height of their, you know, career when, you know, things weren't always going so great for them, kind of shadows and light, you know. So,
yeah.
Like Led Zeppelin itself for their music.
Yeah, no kidding. And it was right when they were promoting their huge album, Physical Graffiti. So when they went on stage, what was the transformation? Because you saw them down and out, and then you're covering them, and you watch them get in front of the crowd, I assume, in Chicago. What was that like once the lights went up, the house lights went up, and people, of course, were crazy for them then?
Well, I'd love to say that they transformed themselves into the gods of classic rock, you know, but actually, one of the charms of this book, if it has any, is about all the nights when the shows kind of sucked, you know, when they weren't playing that well and the audiences were unresponsive and they were very frustrated. You mentioned Physical Graffiti. This was their new album in 1975, and they were extremely proud of this new music and were, you know, really, really wanted to come and stun their American fans with their current, you know, stuff, their music. But unfortunately, they went on tour before the album came out, so the music was unfamiliar. And one of the earliest things I noticed going to the shows was that they would start the shows with something, you know, a blast off like rock and roll, and then they would play Over the Hills and Far Away or The Ocean or something the kids had been very familiar with. And then Robert Plant would come to the front of the stage and say, you know, now we're going to do Kashmir from our new album, and we're really proud of it, and we really hope you like it. And they would start to play, and 20,000 kids would go to the bathroom because it was completely unfamiliar to the kids, and they wanted to hear the hits like kids always do. So then Kashmir would be finished, and Led Zeppelin would be astonished to be playing to like a third of the hall. And then all the kids would file back in. They'd play a whole lot of Love and the Moby Dick, and the kids would go bonkers again. And then Robert Plant would come to the front of the stage and go, well, now we're going to do In My Time of Dying or Trampled Underfoot. It's from our new album. Really proud of it. We hope you like it. And they'd go into the song, and then 20,000 kids would go get a beer. And it would be the same thing over again because the kids were just not familiar with this stuff. It was a different kind of Led Zeppelin than they were used to.
Yeah.
So after the shows, the band would be backstage or on the plane going, you know, why is this happening to us? What a nightmare. You know, all the kids are leaving the halls when we're playing our new stuff. And I'm there in the corner taking notes, you know, and I thought this was a really fascinating, you know, way to look at Led Zeppelin that no one really had seen before. So that's this book, LZ75.
So you're talking about Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. You did interviews with them, obviously. What was, and you said when you hooked up with Page the first time, you know, he'd hurt his finger. What was Page like? One of my favorite axemen, by the way. What was he like in conversation?
Well, he was very exhausted and didn't feel well, and he was medicating his hand with you know, what I could see was Jack Daniels, but I heard that there were, you know, other medications at work as well. So he was very quiet. He spoke in almost a whisper. You'd go into his hotel suite and there'd be some Bob Marley music playing softly and a lot of candles and the curtains drawn. And, you know, it was like talking to kind of a wizard. He had very long hair and you know, 29 years old, you know, 20, 30, not even 30 yet, I don't think. And you know, at the height of his powers, and yet very quiet. But, you know, the transformation you mentioned before would be most obvious on him when he would come on stage, because he would just light up like a Roman candle. And one of the things, you know, in those days, concerts were different. Led Zeppelin would come on stage and the kids would start throwing cherry bombs and firecrackers at them, you know, and this seemed to set something in Led Zeppelin off, and they often kind of worked on this negative energy that they got from the crowd and would throw it back to them in terms of positive energy. So there was this very interesting exchange of vibes and energy between Led Zeppelin and their audiences, especially on the West Coast you know, in sort of the major cities like that, and they fed off their audience, and once again though some nights were not very good, and the band knew about it, and they would you know be depressed, so it's that kind of mixture of light and shade that I'm kind of after in this book, LZ75.
Yeah, also in the book you talk about this, and I know the audience, this revelation would be huge. Who was it, and I don't know why I don't know this, but who was the rock star that moonlighted as a heroin dealer?
Well, there was one in Los Angeles, and I don't want to say his name because it's, you know, one of those things that I'd rather people read in the book. But his... His real name is Jimmy Osterberg. So anyone who's like a rock trivia guy, you know, can convert that to you know, the guy's stage name and find out who's who I'm talking about.
There you go. We have a prize for somebody who does that. 800-259-5791. I'm gonna use that and prompt people. What about just a couple more? What about Riot House? What happened at Riot House?
Well, back in those days, all the bands stayed at the Continental Hyatt House on Sunset Boulevard, but the locals called it the Riot House when Led Zeppelin stayed there, because they would take over entire floors. They would be guarded by moonlighting FBI agents, and they'd be running motorcycles up and down the hall and throwing TVs off the balcony and you know, doing not so much that tour, but, you know, that's what that hotel was famous for. And one of the funny things was, when I was researching the book, I went to the Riot House where I'd stayed 35 years ago with the band, but now it was called the Andaz West Hollywood, and they'd closed off all the balconies and made them sunrooms, and so you couldn't throw a TV off the balcony onto Sunset Boulevard anymore, which I thought was a very sad commentary on Los Angeles in the 21st century. But anyway,
No kidding. One last one we got to ask you is, you have to reveal something. We promise we'll buy the book. Who is the lover in Black Country Woman? Who is it?
I don't want to say.
Oh!
I'll tell you. I can tell you. Once again, it's like saying who the murderer, who done it in the who done it. You know, and I want the reader to kind of work up to that at the end. But I can tell you that it was someone who was very close to Robert Plant, who should not have been very close to Robert Plant.
Oh, okay, that's a hint there. This has been your life. You've hung out with rock stars and rock bands and all these sort of people. And you've got something. Somebody was telling me you've got a book coming out about Carly Simon. That's going to be great. I can't wait to hear that. Read that one. But of all the people that you covered, Stephen, who's your favorite? Was there one favorite rocker person? Who was it?
The one I respected most was Bob Marley, but the one I really loved the most was Michael Jackson. I was the ghostwriter for his book Moonwalk, and I spent about 8 months with him, and I really thought he was just great, and it may be that everything you ever heard about him was true, but I personally don't believe it. So that's my answer.
Wow. And Bob Marley, was he just great to be around?
Bob Marley was incredible to be around in 1975, around the same time as Led Zeppelin. When I wasn't with Led Zeppelin, I was down in Jamaica with Bob Marley, and that was very inspiring because he was really leading a revolution for, you know, not only a country, but the whole third world, so that was great.
Yeah, no kidding. What a great life. What's next? I said Carly Simon. You just keep doing it, right?
I'm thinking about Stevie Nicks. What do you think?
Love Stevie Nicks. Can I be there when you do one of those interviews?
No, if she'll talk to me, I don't know. But I think the pages would turn, don't you?
I think the pages would turn. I have some questions, definitely. Stephen, you're delightful. Stephen Davis, of course, LZ75, as he said, The Lost Chronicles of Led Zeppelin's 1975 American Tour. Pick it up. Thanks, Stephen.